You guys ever hear that song by Judy Garland about friendship?
No, never, Donnie.
It's awesome. You should check it out sometime.
Donnie, do you know how old I am?
12?
I'll tell you what, it's not old enough to know Judy Garland songs off the back of my neck.
Natalia, that was the intro right there. You guys ever heard that song called Friendship by Judy Garland? And you just play it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll do that.
Hey leaders, we're talking to you today about a topic that's near and dear, I think, to all three of our hearts, is this idea of friendship. I'm Donnie Fisher, executive pastor here at Aletheia, joined with our director of discipleship, Sarah McCarthy.
Hey guys.
Who is always awesome, and also equally as awesome, at least today, Tyler Parker.
Hey.
Who is our media guru. Have we given you an official title at our church?
I don't think so. Okay. I think I'm video assistant.
Video? Then who's like
Which
video,
is a little bit underwhelming.
Are you the assistant to the video director? Is that what you are?
No, because I am the video director. But I just am not allowed to have the title of director or something.
One day when you get a little bit older,
okay,
and you get my Judy Garland references a little bit more quickly.
That's what it's going to take?
That's all it takes, man. Okay. So that's how Sarah got her job.
You heard it here first.
Yeah. So for those of you who want to apply for a job, if you want to take Tyler's job, just learn all the Judy Garland songs and come sing them to me and we'll do something about it.
Who knew ecclesial advancement included Judy Garland? Not me.
Welcome
I just
secret.
Used two massive words.
Yes. Well, see, this is why we here at Aletheia promote based on fruitfulness and faithfulness, and that includes to the Judy Garland classics.
Okay.
So anyway, we're actually talking about friendship today here on our podcast for you leaders. This is an important topic, I think. Wouldn't you two agree?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think it's important on many levels. Obviously, God's called us to be a family. And functional families like being around one another. But Tyler actually led a family conversation that we had on this. We do these conversations on Wednesday nights as a church. We call them family conversations, and we pick a topic. Usually they have a little bit of controversy intermixed in them, or there's like maybe a pain point or just one that has a lot of questions that people have. And we like to tackle those together as a church family. So if you're ever free on the fourth Wednesday of the month, come out to the YMCA Theater here in Cambridge, and we'll be having a family conversation more than likely on something. But one of them we did was on friendship, and Tyler led that.
Hey.
Great job, Tyler.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I was impressed. Were you impressed, Sam?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Tyler, he's not just good looking. He's got some good ideas in that noggin of his as well.
Yeah, I like to roll under the radar, surprise people.
Yeah.
You know, be the underdog all the time.
Be the underdog. Remember when Tyler did the offering moment right at the end of last year when we were preparing for our big give? And everybody was like, who knew Tyler was so awesome at offering?
Revival broke out.
Yeah, I mean, like, all of a sudden, like,
you're going to give to the big give.
And everybody's like, am I still at Aletheia? What is this place? So...
a beautiful time.
We had church for about for about 120 seconds on a Sunday, and it was powerful.
That's what I'm here for.
But Tyler's not just good at money, not just good about making me look foolish on a podcast by not cutting out what I ask him to. He's also not just good at the video work that he does for a church. He's got some pretty cool depth, some pretty cool insight. So we wanted to bring some of that out because the content that he shared with us, or rather that you shared with us, Tyler, was pretty good. So we're going to spend some time talking about friendship and why it's important, why it's hard, and how we get past those things. Tyler, take it from there. I want to let you kind of drive this conversation for a little bit because I thought you had some great points about friendship. And when we're talking about friendship within the context of the church, obviously it's more of like a spiritual thing. It's not just... we have an affinity around a certain topic alone, but rather God's doing something in our midst. So I wanted you to kind of talk to us about that, and kind of as you were prepping and researching, what are some of the big key points that you thought were helpful in that moment, but also for our leaders going forward about this idea of friendship?
Yeah. Well, thanks for the opportunity to share a little bit about friendship. And if I start ranting, because I'm known to do this when it comes to friendship, or, well, I guess there's a small difference between ranting and sermonizing.
Most people can't tell the difference.
Yeah, so. That's what I think. So yeah. If I start doing that, just interrupt, ask questions, any of that stuff.
Okay.
But I think, so it's kind of interesting. I've always like really deeply longed for good friends. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting because I thought I was the only person for whom this was true. But then I think just in talking about friendship and studying friendship over the past couple of years, I've heard from a lot of people that even like since childhood, it's like the kinds of kind of cursory friendships that they were having with people in their kindergarten classes or first grade classes or something were just kind of like tastes of some deeper desire that they had.
Yeah.
To have like really good, like deep, intimate friendships with other people. Sort of living my life as a Christian and stuff, I happened upon a very curious verse in John chapter 15 that I've always found super meaningful, but also a little bit confusing. So Jesus is giving this speech to his disciples right before the passion, right? Like right before he goes to the Garden of Gethsemane. And he says, this is my commandment in verse 12. This is John 15, verse 12. It says, this is my commandment that you love one another as I have loved you. And then he says, greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends, which has always been a super fascinating verse for me because like in our culture, like the relationships in which people generally assume the greatest love like resides is in family relationships or in romantic relationships or sexual relationships. Yeah. And Jesus says that like greater love has no one than this than he who lays down his life in the context of friendship. And then not only that, but he says, you are my friends if you do what I command you. So no longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. So I heard a lot in churches about what it means that God is my Father. And I heard a lot about what it means that, like, you know, I'm in the body of Christ and I have these, like, brothers and sisters in Christ. But there's this, like, very interesting, like, missing section of theology, perhaps, that's about, like, what does it mean that I'm friends with God?
Yeah.
And what does that mean for like how I become friends with other people or how I practice friendship, as a vocation or something like that.
So you're saying you did not sing that Israel song growing up. I'm a friend of God.
No, I definitely sang that song.
Sarah, are you familiar with this song?
Yes.
Barely.
Okay. I got to tell you a quick story about this song.
Okay.
So we used to do this song all the time in my previous church and that song was hot for a moment. It was fire. It was great.
Yeah.
And
a barn burner.
About the same time that Pastor Adam started attending the church that I was a part of. This is back when we were college students. Mm-hmm. Well, many of you know, Pastor Adam used to be a worship leader and is a pretty skilled, pretty decent acoustic guitar player. Mm-hmm. Well, the worship leader at that time was one of our elders of the church, and he forced then a college student, Adam, to wear a suit on Sundays and play his acoustic guitar and lead that song. Every time that song came up, some reason Pastor Adam got the honor of singing "I Am a Friend of God," and it was just, it's etched into my memory. And so if you can imagine our lead pastor back in the day, it was great.
So if you see Adam around, just gently under your voice
start humming I'm a friend of God. And he might start you know, kind of like, yeah, like having, you know,
he
flashbacks.
Might be triggered. Yeah.
He might be triggered. Exactly.
Yeah. What an interesting time.
No, but it's true. Like, no, but scriptures going back to the point though, mm-hmm. we are invited not only to a life of righteousness and holiness, and not only should we fear God, but there's a deep relational connect that is available to us and even mm-hmm. promised to us mm-hmm. that as we pursue him and follow him, Jesus basically invites us into this friendship,
yep.
as he describes it. Yep. I think that's a great point, Tyler.
Yeah. So So in my research for this talk, I came across a study that had been commissioned by the United States Surgeon General, one of the Surgeon Generals under former President Obama. Mm-hmm. His name is Vivek Murthy. And his main public health like policy issue during his tenure as the United States Surgeon General was treating loneliness as an epidemic, like a public health problem. And the reason for that is because there are actually really extraordinary like health risks associated with loneliness.
Yeah.
Like for instance, there's you just have like greater risk of heart disease than like obesity, right? Just by virtue of being lonely. And also loneliness is not like a exclusively urban issue. It's also like a rural issue as well.
Sure.
And we also know that scripture says, you know, Genesis 2:18, like it's not good for man to be alone, right? That is specifically in the context of marriage, like the marital relationship. But I also think it's very clear that like humans are not made like to ignore intimacy. Humans are not made like to be alone.
Yeah, we're made for a relationship.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Right.
Hardwired for it even.
Yes. Yeah. And so I always find that like certain aspects of Christian life can function as antidotes to larger societal woes, like larger societal issues, that we should expect that the gospel, right, being true and that the scriptures being true lead us to live like visibly better lives than the lives that our culture can offer to us. And so what we see in our culture is that it is individualistic. A lot of that is due to kind of like living in the West and having like an overemphasis perhaps on individual rights or like a sort of a capitalist system that argues for self-preservation and also for like maximizing self-interest. So we have a very individualistic society.
Yeah.
We also have a very compartmentalized society, and you see this a lot in social media. There's a compartmentalization between the public and the private, that you are somebody completely different in public than you are in private. That people like to project like really awesome images of themselves, but then the person that they are like, you know, in their bed right before they go to bed is not the person that everybody sees.
Right.
And you are alone in like witnessing that person frequently. And that in and of itself is very isolating.
That's true. Yeah.
And then the last thing that I wanted to kind of point out about like where our culture is that, hopefully everybody who's listening has heard of a guy named Sigmund Freud. Have you guys heard of Sigmund Freud?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Just curious. So Freud's major
not all of us went to some of us went to state school, Tyler, but we do know Sigmund Freud.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
Even at the state school level.
Nice. No, that's great. I'm glad that everybody's learning about Sigmund Freud. Or maybe I don't know. We'll
find
out.
We'll see.
We'll see. I think it's important to know what his contribution is to Western thought. So his contribution is that human beings, or like what is most fundamentally human about human beings, is that we are beholden to biological impulses, particularly sexual impulses, which, to put it in plain English, means that what our culture has adopted of Freud's ideas is that to ignore sexual impulses or to not like seek your humanness as a response to
your quote humanness
as a response to sexual impulses. If you're not seeking your humanity in sexual knowledge or things like that, then you're missing out on what sex has to offer you and what a fully embodied, like fruitful human life has to offer you. And the scriptures like just don't testify to that, right? The most human person that there ever was a guy who never had sex. That's Jesus, right? So what the result of living in a post-Freudian society has been is that people constantly look to sexual relationships and or romantic relationships as the location of real intimacy. And miss out on other types of relationships that can offer you like meaningful intimacy. And even in a Christian perspective, like meaningful examples of what our relationship with God looks like,
right?
As well, that like marriage or sexual relationships are not the only place to find relationships that point you to what your relationship with God is like.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And Sarah, I'm curious. So were you there at his family conversation?
When he wasn't, but I've heard so much about it since then that I feel like I was there.
So I was just curious from your, because Sarah, obviously you're in the lives, you're hands-on in a lot of people's lives in our church. Groups you're leading, you know, women you're discipling, just different relationships. Does your experience corroborate what Tyler's saying about loneliness?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as much as that's true across our whole culture, it's also exacerbated by living somewhere like Cambridge and Boston, where people are so busy and so transient. It's not at all unusual to have someone show up to your group who's like, I'm in Boston for 9 months for a grad school program.
Yeah, that's tough.
You know, with my spouse and my kids, and, you know, we're trying to get adjusted to a new life, but then we're moving again in 9 months. Mm-hmm. And or even people who are here over the long term, there's just so much fragmentation. And I mean, I know over the years, almost every 6 month period at Aletheia, if you had asked me who my closest set of girlfriends were, like almost every 6 months, one of those people has moved. Yeah. And I've been really blessed to have really rich and wonderful relationships in our church, but it can be really exhausting trying to maintain those when you're just sort of in this constant cycle in our city of people coming and going. So I think I totally agree with Tyler, your insights about this. And on top of it, I think it's really exacerbated by the particular spot where our church is located. And the culture that's around us.
Mm-hmm. I think here, you know, it's interesting that you brought up those three ways, this individualistic, this compartmentalized, and even just the Freudian nature of the problem of loneliness. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think the Freudian is the one that we don't pay attention to the most. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's just like, that just simmers under the surface of everything in our culture. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when I look at Cambridge, and I'm only processing this right now, at least these three. And I heard your talk for a family conversation. But I think I've never been anywhere, I don't think, in my life where I felt like the people were as compartmentalized as they are here. I've got this work thing, I've got these friends. You know, maybe it's a little different if you're on the college campus, because a lot of your quote work and friends are like intermixed together. But friends, church, work, recreation, my running club, like there's just so many compartments that I feel like in this city. When I say in this city, I think it's a little different in the burbs. Mm-hmm. Those of you who don't know, I live about 12 miles away. It feels different where I live. Mm-hmm. But when I come to work there every day, and the people that I talk to in our church, there's like these just, they compartmentalize everything. And
yeah, so I mean, I could totally say that on college campuses, it's not different. Like you're in the math club, so you're the math guy to the math people.
Right.
Then you're the Christian guy to the Christian people, and you're the like sports guy to the sports people. And so you're not. There's like very little intersection between those spaces.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of like keep up the charade of like being a certain image to a certain person, and until you like are alone in your room at night, and then you can actually be who you actually are.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Or what I would argue in ministry a lot, I talk to people who, when they're in that moment, they don't know who they are.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And so the voice that comes and tries to define them in that moment, oftentimes we would argue is not the voice of the Lord.
Right.
Is rather trying to, you know, drive a lie into their soul when they were letting down their guard. And so it is important. This whole idea of having, of acknowledging these realities in our culture, so that we then can develop proper relationships, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so how do we fix it, Tyler? What do we do?
Yeah. So I argue that the solution, to many of these problems, might be found in, well, of course, in our relationship with God, right? But if our relationship with God is friendship, then that should affect how we, or in a form friendship, right? That should affect how we practice certain relationships in our everyday lives, particularly in the realm of friendship. So I argue that there is this Christian conception of a thing called spiritual friendship. Mm-hmm. And spiritual friendship has three different components that are neatly and beautifully Translated into Alethea's Truth, Grace, Change model.
What?
That's right, yes.
It's like all of life.
The shock. The shock.
Shock and awe right now.
What? So we'll start with the truth component, and that is that spiritual friendship is Christ-centered. There's three components. It's Christ-centered, the grace component is that it's covenantal, and the change component is that it's missional. Hmm. But yeah, let's start with spiritual friendship being Christ-centered, that it's centered on truth.
Yeah. Mm.
So spiritual friendship reflects God's truth and nature to other people. And like we just said, like Jesus is the perfect image of God, right? He is the God-man. He is like God come down as a human being. So if you want to know like what it means to look like God to other people, to reflect the image of God to other people, look at Jesus, right?
Yeah.
And what does Jesus like tell us our relationship is with him? He says that we're his friends, right? And again, that's John 15, 14. You are my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing, but I have called you friends. For all that I have heard from my Father, I have made known to you. So, right, there's this component of like, if we want to practice real friendship, like true friendship that reflects God's nature, we have to be committed to telling the truth to our brothers and sisters in Christ, to the people that we call friends, right?
Yeah.
So I thought that sorry, go ahead Donnie. Yeah,
it's funny. So I got an example then of this. I think it'd be kind of funny to say this or interesting, this Christ-centered friendship and mm-hmm. truth. We were just having a conversation in our quote break room, our room where we have a refrigerator here at our offices. And we were talking about the nature of relationships, men and women, and we were joking around about, you know, healthy or unhealthy ones and different stories and all kinds. So some of our staff members were in there. And I told a story about my friend Ross, who I'm so grateful for. Ross Middleton was a huge impact in my life. And we were roommates at the point of this story, and my wife and I were not married, obviously, because I was roommates with Ross. But we weren't dating yet either, but we were kind of talking, you mm-hmm. know. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget, we were hanging outside late one night outside of the front of my house, me and Jana, my wife, totally like just talking, and that's it, right? Just kind of like you do, you know, you're kind of like, hey, I kind of like you, you kind of like me, but you're not saying it yet. Mm-hmm. And I came inside, and I went to go to bed, and into my room walks Ross, my friend, and basically says, hey, what are you doing with her? Like, like, are you going to do something, or are you just leading her on? Mm-hmm. Like, basically confronts me, mm-hmm. like, and how are you going to honor God in this, yeah. in this way? Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, it's none of your business. Get out. Like, it's funny because what I said. And his response is, yes, it is my business. Like, because in the sense, I love you mm-hmm. and I want to see you honor God with your life.
Yeah.
And we've committed to walk together in this, but part of that commitment to chasing after Jesus as friends is I'm going to share with you some hard truth in a moment. I think that's not the only way that this works out, obviously, at Christ Center, but him calling me and even using a moment of rebuke to establish further mine and his relationship mm-hmm. in the truth of Jesus Christ mm-hmm. Really helped me.
Yeah.
And I would argue helped my now wife because I didn't just lead her on for months on end because my brother like stepped in.
Yeah.
Thank you for that relationship.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so Aristotle and Catholic theologians sort of historically have thought about friendship as having sort of three tiers, and two of the tiers are just false friendship. Hmm. So one of the false friendship tiers is called worldly friendship. You could also call this transactional friendship, mm-hmm. where you're friends with another person like just because they can offer you something. So let's say that I'm bad at math, but Donnie's good at math. Then I might be Donnie's friend because he can help me on my PSATs yeah. or my math yeah. problems. But then, like, once
that was my friend Michael in fifth grade. But keep going.
Devastating. Yeah. But hopefully this helps you heal. Yeah. But once I don't have to take math tests anymore, then maybe we're not friends anymore, right? The second type of friendship is called carnal friendship or pleasure-based friendship. This is the kind of friendship that you experience with another person because you share a similar interest. So Donnie's into, I don't know, baseball. I'm into baseball. We get together to watch baseball games together. But when I, like, something shifts in my life and I don't really like baseball anymore.
Say you have five kids or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Something then like
allegedly,
that.
Like, hypothetically, somebody has five kids and all of a sudden they don't have time to watch baseball anymore.
Keep exactly, going. Right?
Yeah.
Then the friendship falls apart, right? Because I might be way more interested in figuring out how to raise my kids well than I am in baseball. And if our friendship was just based on a shared pleasure, yeah, like, that friendship dissolves, right? But then the last tier of friendship, which is what the church has called real friendship, is spiritual friendship, where it's not about what I can derive from you, but what actually I can contribute to you.
Yeah.
And spiritual friendship, both parties are committed to the growth of the other person's character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's exactly what your friend was doing with you as you were like kind of talking to Jana. As he was saying, like, you know, I'm committed to you. I'm committed to seeing you grow in honor, and committed to seeing you grow as a man. And so I'm going to challenge you.
Yeah.
And when two people are in that kind of friendship, they, like, in order for the friendship to like survive, they have to both submit to that kind of counsel from their brothers. But like when you kind of place your character in the hands of another person, like your personhood in the hands of another person, like that's the deepest friendship that you can experience. And that is the kind of friendship that we also experience with Jesus, because we place our personhood and our character in his hands and let him shape it.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's a real depth of intimacy. That's like not possible in those other types of friendship.
That's good.
Yeah. So, any questions on that, I guess, or other thoughts?
I'm interested to hear what you have to say about this whole covenantal piece.
Yeah.
Because I think where you're going to go, there's a nature to all these different ideas. Okay, so like Christ-centered and covenantal.
Mm-hmm.
So I have been in friendships where I've allowed someone to challenge me, and then when the tables have turned, in the sense of I felt that there was something that needed to be challenged in,
mm-hmm.
it has really harmed the friendship in some ways, where they kind of walked away.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm interested to hear. I think we all are just I want to hear what you have to say about like the covenantal piece of like that kind of binding together, what that looks like in grace and how that all fuses together.
Yeah. So we recognize, you know, thinking about the end of the Great Commission, right? Where Jesus says, "All authority in heaven and on earth." This is Matthew 28 for people who don't know where the Great Commission is. Yeah. The end of Matthew 28. "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go make disciples of all nations, teaching them all I have commanded, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And behold, I am with you even till the end of the age." Right? That's like covenant language.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm sticking with you.
Yeah.
Right. And I find that
ride
like,
or die.
Yeah, exactly. And like true friendship, it recognizes that like perfection is not like a temporary thing, or the process of like building character is like not a temporary thing. It's like an eternal thing. And it's really incredible that Jesus has committed himself to like building our character, right? But in order for that process to continue happening, we have to commit to letting Jesus continue to do that for the rest of our lives, right? And so how that's reflected in friendship is that like God has voluntarily chosen to be perfectly faithful to us as flawed human beings. And so when we seek to image God's character to other people, we also have to commit ourselves voluntarily to being faithful to people who are flawed.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And so what that has meant in my friendships is that like I recognize that the work of sanctification that's happening in this friendship is way more important than my feelings.
Yeah. Mm.
Right? And so if somebody like hurts me or like offends me or like makes me sad, or they call me out for something I didn't want them to call me out for or something like that, like I have to recognize that God is doing work in this friendship And I don't get to just give it up because I don't like it at this point.
Yeah.
In the same way that I don't get to just give up my relationship with God just because I don't like that God told me to do a certain thing. Right. So that's what covenant means. And it also goes both ways, because friendship is like the only relationship that doesn't really come with external obligations. So like being in a family, like you're related to somebody by blood, just kind of societally speaking, there are kind of expectations that come along with being born of the same person. Or like when you enter into a marriage, it's like the marriage had, like two people have agreed that they have duties to each other, right?
Sure.
But in a friendship, technically you can walk away at any moment. And yet, like, God just as much could just walk away from us if he wanted to, but he doesn't, because he chooses to be faithful to us because he knows like what that produces within us and what it produces in terms of his mission for the world. So as Christians, as people who seek to emulate God and emulate the way that God practices friendship with us, with our friends, we have to commit ourselves to staying in the relationship and to receiving sound counsel from other people and to giving sound counsel to other people and forgiveness and other stuff.
One of the things I find really powerful about that whole covenantal idea is just that there's so much in our culture around, like, if someone isn't adding to your life, you don't need them in it. And if somebody isn't, like, you know, if somebody isn't helping you feel better about yourself, like, you don't need them around. You need to, like, cut out. But it's so prevalent. And like I think especially in notions of friendship, because we don't have these external obligations. So why shouldn't I cut someone out of my life who isn't currently adding something to me? Like, if in the last month this friendship hasn't made my life quantifiably better, why should I maintain it? And so obviously there are unhealthy relationships that we aren't meant to maintain. But I'd say, just as a general rule, this idea of friendship as something that's covenantal, and even when things are hard, like, I think for me, some of my friendships at Aletheia, even to just get super practical, my friendship with Becca is probably one of the longest ones I've had since being at Aletheia. She's our worship leader and is also on staff. So she's one of my closest friends in the church, and we also work together. And I love her to death, but it's probably honestly been one of the first friendships where I've been close enough for long enough that we've had to like get really good at repenting to one another when we hurt each other's feelings or when like one of us accidentally says something that hurts the other, or we forget about something important or whatever. I mean, like, Becca's an incredible friend, but just the nature of being so close to someone over a long period of time, I've seen God really shape not just our friendship, but also shape me and my ability to come forward and say like, hey, I know I messed that up, or something like that, which in these friendships where it's sort of like, oh, well, as soon as it gets hard, I'm out, you know, God doesn't have the opportunity to shape us in that way of like learning how to repent, not just to God, but also to others, and then experience the depth of friendship that you have on the other side of someone who you know you can go to and have those conversations with.
I think it's a great point. I also think that this whole idea of being faithful towards flawed humans is not easy. And I think one of the challenging things for me over time is realizing that even in the context of covenantal relationships, some of us have larger capacities than others. So in other words, some of us are just, I shouldn't say some of us, some as in like I'm, there are those who are better friends than others. Just naturally, and also learned to be better friends than others. And learning to have grace in those moments, the challenge, and also knowing how many people you can friend. I know it's a little more challenging, especially for some of you leaders who are part of this church and listening to this podcast. It's challenging to have the revolving door of Cambridge, because every May, you lose a significant portion of your relationships, at least in proximity, who go on, and most of them go on to a place where they're going to be rooted and planted. And they kind of want to remain friends with you, and you want to remain friends with them. And then you have a whole new set that gets replaced, like has come in, and we can't allow those people just to wither in our church. We've got to engage them as well. So some of us who've been here now for approaching 10 years, that's a lot of people who come through. And I feel maxed out all the time, relationally speaking. And I feel bad sometimes for the ones who I neglect, whether they're here local or distance. But it is so refreshing when there's those covenant friends who stand by you, mm-hmm. even, you know, and who love you and who come in and out as your schedule allows. And not like, I'm trying to paint this picture, this idea of like, no, I know that God's called me to walk with these people and it might look different for a couple months and we might not be able to hang out whenever I want, but I'm going to keep this relationship Christ-centered. I'm going to stick with them through mm-hmm. this. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks something over time.
Yeah.
And I'm thankful for those kind of relationships.
Yeah. So I think, yeah. So just to kind of, I don't want to say caveat, but it's like areas of wisdom for practicing this. Like the kind of spiritual friendships that I have generally exist with people that I have a bit of proximity to, like just geographical proximity. Like sure. they are close. Or at least the ones that are particularly intense, these kinds of friendships. And covenantal friendship or spiritual friendship is a mutual endeavor. Like yeah. it's not one person can't be like, I'm in a covenantal friendship with you. And the other person's like, yeah. I don't really know. It has to be mutual. Yeah. And so if you are like trying to make efforts to like be covenant with friends with somebody who like doesn't really want that level of depth, it's going to be hard, but you kind of like need to let that go.
Yeah, sure.
Because like, it's just going to zap a certain amount of emotional energy out of you that will be unhealthy. Yeah. But that being said, I think that, and Sarah was even kind of just talking about this, like one of the main aspects of covenantal friendship that I find so crucial and even so fundamentally countercultural is just transparency, like radical transparency. Sure. Yeah. So that like, if you do feel hurt by a friend, you're not just being quiet and like letting a resentment build, but instead your natural response is to go talk to that person, because that relationship ought to have enough trust in it to where you can bring whatever you need to bring to that person and say like, hey, this is how I feel. And let's work through this. And I think that people should also even be, you know, as you're listening and discerning about like, God, who are the covenant friends in my life, or who are the people that you want me to like experience spiritual friendship with, to like go to those people and say, you know, hey, this is how I feel about you. This is what I derive from this relationship. This is what I think that I can offer you. Like, I'd love it if we like, you know, took this conception of spiritual friendship like seriously in the context of this relationship. I've had that kind of conversation with a couple people, Nate Odie, Marcelo Carvalho. And it's like, it's kind of like a weird conversation sometimes, like feels a little bit awkward, but actually
will
like
you be my friend?
Yeah, it's honestly yeah, kind of cool. Like that. But honestly, like when people get approached in that way, sometimes they just like don't know how much they mean to you. And like, hearing yeah. it said aloud is like one of the greatest expressions of love that they will have experienced. And they might actually be super interested. Like they might think the same thing, but they would just think it was awkward to talk about.
Yeah.
And so being transparent and explicit in like, I want to be in covenant with you. I want to like, you know, have this friendship last for the rest of our lives. I want to like submit myself to your counsel and also like give you counsel. Like, it's just like a very deep, really countercultural way of approaching friendship, yeah. but can like help us approximate the kind of friendship that God has with us in really kind of mind-blowing levels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we move on to the whole missional component, which I think is super important, if any of you ever, so on the negative side, I'm sure there's somebody who's listening saying, mm-hmm. I want that friend, but I don't have it. Or I had that and it didn't work out. It went pear-shaped.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had that go pear-shaped? Like, by the way, Tyler's been defining it, a covenantal friend who you feel like you're no longer walking in that close relationship with by no choice of your own.
Yeah. I've yeah. definitely had that happen for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, I definitely have as well. It can be really hard.
Yeah. So how do you recover from that?
Honestly, for me, like the recovery came from other friends, like,
replaced.
Yeah.
No, just kidding.
what happened in this one, covenant friendship type thing was I was like discipling somebody, and, the context of that discipleship was very close and like intimate and really cool. But then the person like moved away, like, which happens right in an urban environment, like sure. a college environment, you graduate, you move away. It's like, Like, yeah. And so I had a conversation with the person about like covenant friendship and hoping that we could like maintain something even over long distance. And he just was like not really interested in it. But also because like when I was growing up, like I had people that my parents were friends with in college, like hanging out like at my house. So that was like a thing, that was a conception in my brain that like, yeah, there are friends that you have from college that are your friends for the rest of your life. But he didn't really have that growing up. So like, I guess he didn't really like see like this type of friendship like being a reality in his life, and thought like it was like better to just like try to make friends like where he was gonna be later. And that hurt a lot. But like all through that time period of me struggling with like, what is this friendship and how could I be giving so much to this friendship and it not be like returned? And like knowing that my giving was appreciated and yet like still not like paid back. The first thing is I realized like, wow, like how must God feel when when I'm distant from him, right? Then secondly, it caused me to think about friendships that I might be abandoning. I really noticed that this was happening with my twin sister, who calls me every single week. And like all throughout college, like I just was such a bad person at returning phone calls. But like going through that thing with that friendship made me be like, wow, my sister is really committed to me. And I'm gonna like be committed to her too. But then the last thing was just like all of the friends that were like listening to me like cry and like be hurt and like be really confused during that time period. Like I looked around and I was like, wait a minute, like these are my covenant friends. Like these are the ones who are like hearing me like struggle with this one friendship, and they're not jealous about it or envious about it. And instead they just want to like help me through it and like help me seek God through it and be encouraged through it. And I realized like, wow, like these people around me, like, you know, folks like Nate and Marcelo, like they're the ones that maybe I should be spending a little more like time and investment in. And so, yeah, it definitely took time, but also just like investment in those actual covenant relationships. And that was like a really healing experience.
Yeah. I would add in my experience too, that the same way that the covenant friendships I've had that have persisted have been an opportunity for God to really refine some things in me, I think also the friendships that have not lasted as long and that I have felt hurt by have also been opportunities for God to refine a lot of things in me. Because just anytime that we're close to other humans, they wind up disappointing us, and or we wind up getting hurt by them. And a lot of the time it has a lot to do with what our own baggage or issues are, and trying as much as possible to walk through that experience with God, and with trusted, you know, people speaking into my life, but really trying to let God do his work and like, okay, why do I feel so rejected? Why do I feel so hurt? How do I handle this? Because it can be such an opportunity for growth with God, but it can also be such an opportunity for resentment and bitterness to take root and to really poison, you know, not just that friendship, but also your relationship with God and with other people.
Yeah, I think it's good. Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking of multiple friendships that like just, man, I'm sad about where they either ended up or where they're currently at, you know, and specifically the ones that I didn't do, quote, I didn't do anything about, I didn't do anything wrong, at least as far as I can tell. And so I think that's key, though, to remember that, like, no, God invites us in a relationship. And he also has a people for us to walk with, a family for us to walk in, these kind of spiritual friendships. And so, you know, I mean, you even see in the early church, right? Like what's happening, you know, and you know, with Paul's early ministry, and Paul and, you know, Barnabas split ways over an issue. But then later you see some, you know, hints of reconciliation. The scriptures are like, okay, humans are going to human. But God's going to continue to pour out his grace. And so I actually have faith, if you will, for some of those old relationships to be restored one day. And that's what I hope for. And honestly, I still work for him, you know, a little bit. So I still make phone calls. I still periodically check in. When I see them, I don't distance myself. I try to draw close. But it is challenging and it can be painful. But I think there's a promise. God does restore things, and so let's press in. All right. Yeah. So missional though, we got. I know we're spending a lot of time on covenantal, but missional. Yeah. Missional point of these friendships, Tyler.
Yeah. So we talked about the truth component of spiritual friendship, which is that it's Christ centered. You gotta like share God's truth with your friends, and you gotta receive God's truth from your friends. It's full of grace, which is that you like are committed to long-term extension of grace over your friends, forgiveness, transparency, commitment, all of those things, even in the midst of their flaws. And then the final thing is about change, and that's that spiritual friendship is inherently missional, right? So we move from this place of worldly and carnal friendships where friendship is about us, like what can we derive from the friendship, what can we gain from the friendship, to a place where we see or seeking what can I give to another person through the context of friendship. So that's the first area of transformation, is that we move from being self-centered to other-centered.
Yeah.
In the context of friendship, and deep spiritual friendship. Secondly, is the transformation of the church. So we recognize, especially in urban environments, but although it doesn't have to be in urban, exclusively in urban environments, that there's even like people can come to church at Aletheia on a Sunday, walk in, walk out, and like not have met anybody, yeah, or like not, yeah, have grown closer to anybody. And that's like not what God's church is meant to be, right? Definitely. Look at the end of Acts chapter 2, 3,000 people get saved. And what do? They devote themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and to breaking of bread and the prayers. They devote themselves, yeah, to community, to intimately living life with one another. And that's what the church is supposed to look like. And so I think that if we can start on this kind of like micro scale of like, okay, there are people around me, there are people in my small group, maybe I'm not even in a small group and I need to join a small group or a community group. Like, there are people around me who are probably lonely, like probably experiencing loneliness, probably not experiencing the depth of friendship that God has to offer. And so I can start there. Like I can start, yeah, with being vulnerable to them. And we were talking about compartmentalization earlier. Like, yeah, I think that the antidote to compartmentalization is like authenticity, but like Christian authenticity, that we can be who we are in Christ in every sphere of our lives. We don't have to be the Christian just to the Christians and then the math guy to the like math people. We can be like the Christ-centered person who loves math to the Christians and to the math people as well. So what that means is that like when we practice like radical transparency in the context of community, when we confess our sins to one another that we might be healed, we don't have to like hide in our sin and be lonely in our sin, but instead we can be open to grace and forgiveness in the context of community. Mm-hmm. And for me, that happens primarily in the realm of friendship, that the people that I confess my sins to are my friends, my spiritual friends. Mm. Yeah. And I do that like radically and consistently because I trust that what they're going to tell me, first of all, I trust they're not going to judge me. Second, I trust that the advice and the counsel that they're going to give me is going to help me look more like Jesus and be a better disciple of Jesus. And then third, like there's a mutuality to the confession and to the submission to wise counsel that like makes relationship deeper. It's not isolating. It's the opposite of isolating. It's like connecting, right? It's, yeah, intimate. So we see the transformation of the church in that way, that we come from being like a building full of individuals to an actual spiritual family where people are like dependent upon one another. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the transformation of the world, right? Is that like, you know, our broader culture does not have this devotion to Christ, the devotion to the story of Christ and to the image of God that like allows us to have a foundation upon which to build spiritual friendships. So the more that Christians like practice this kind of friendship and get really good at this kind of friendship, the more that we can introduce people who can't even imagine that friendship looks like this or can look like this, we can like show them this kind of friendship out in the world and they'll be like, why are you radically transparent? Like, yeah, why do you like actually commit yourself to me? Why do you forgive me when I do something that makes you angry? Like, that's not normal. Like, why do, yeah, you don't have to do that in the context of friendship. And then we get to say, because I'm friends with a God who does all of this stuff for me. So I extend the same blessings to you, right?
Yeah.
Let me like come check out my church. Everybody's doing it, you know, yeah. here at my mm-hmm. church. And so what happens there is that people's imaginations get disrupted. Mm-hmm. They think that the world, and this is what sin does, right? It kind of traps you in this subpar version of the world, and where you think that like something that is mediocre is the best that is available to you. And then when they get to walk into the church and see these kind of radical, other-centered friendships, they realize, wow, I've been living in this world that has offered me limited options.
Yeah.
There might be something more. And in order to participate in this more, maybe I need to explore more about what this Jesus guy is like, or explore more about what this gospel is. And maybe it could be the thing that might make my life better, right? Not like that heaven is not just the better place that we get to experience on the other side of life, but also that Jesus came to give us life and life more abundantly, like now,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's how I perceive a spiritual friendship as transformational, is that it allows us to deepen our relationships, deepen our familial relationships, introduce people to the gospel of Jesus Christ, yeah. who has called us friends.
Hmm.
So
yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I really like about this framework of these friendships being Christ-centered and covenantal and missional is sort of a practical encouragement to people who are like, but man, I don't know who in my life is that. That I think this really frees us to be friends with people who, by the world standards, like maybe we don't have an affinity for the same things, or we don't. Like some of my closest women who I've walked with are people who, if we did not have Jesus in common, we wouldn't have anything in common.
Yeah, yeah.
But exactly. They have been such incredible Christ-centered and covenantal and missional friends to me. And so it's easy to look around sometimes and feel like, well, I don't know who in my small group I really click with, or I don't know who on my team on Sunday I really like have gelled with enough to go get dinner with next, or whatever. But this really frees us to say like, no, if we're doing these things together, like I can practice being more transparent with the women in my group, even if they're not the people who, were I to meet them, you know, in some other context, they would be my closest friends, and that God is faithful to grow those friendships through that.
I could add one more thing super quickly.
Yeah, go for it.
It's just that like, I think that sometimes, so I think about this sometimes in terms of marriage, where like sometimes God just drops your spouse like right in front of you and it's like, wow, this is crazy. Great. Yeah. But then other times it takes a lot of seeking and like looking, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I think the same thing is true of spiritual friendship too, that like there have been some friends that I've had in my life that I just had a class with, and then we realized we had all this crazy stuff in common and we shared the same sense of humor. And like that's a gift, and that's certainly something that I think is awesome. But then other times, like it requires me like asking a lot of people to grab food with me from my small group, or like calling a lot of different people from church, and being like outreachy, you know, and looking to see like, you know, maybe I wonder if this like this sharing thing, this transparency thing, like might work out with this person. Mm-hmm. It does take a lot of kind of trial and error. But just know that like God is with you through this process, and he's like not going to let you fall as you pursue kinds of relationship that like reflect his image to other people.
Yeah. That's great, Tyler. Thank you for sharing all that.
Yeah.
Leaders, as we kind of sign off here, I just wanted to say, man, friendship is tricky, but it's one of the greatest blessings that God has given us. This idea of relationship, spiritual friendship, that Tyler's been kind of the running point on unpacking for us here these past few moments together. Really look at your life. And I think, you know, do a little survey of, okay, what relationships look like for you? Are they just based upon a world or convenience or compartmentalized? Or do you actually have some spiritual relationships or friendships, and how many of them fit that bill? And not to in any way condemn those of you who this is harder for, but rather come to the realization where that currently is for you, so that you can press in and see these friendships developed over time, and so that also you can invite others into this kind of relationship and model for both our church and our world what a blessing it is when we walk together and love this way. And so, so here's my suggestion, like we do always gather. What's, ask yourself this question today. What's one thing you can do to grow in this area? How might you become a better friend in the way that the Bible describes it? Tyler's going to, Tyler, can you put the show notes on here for this? Add your notes from this conversation.
Sure.
About this, the spiritual friendship. I think they're super helpful and they'll be super brief and amazing. But leaders, friend on. And we'll see you around. Bless you all.